Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now, the host of the Home Improvement Show, Rich Orris, on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, everybody, we are back. Hour two of the Home Improvement Show getting started right now. We've got plenty to do, plenty to go over, lots of great topics. But again, remember, your topic is the main topic. What do you have going on around your house, I ask? What are you trying to accomplish? And do you need any advice, any hints, any tips, any thoughts, or... Like Sharon called in earlier, have you found something that's a easy, quick solution that helps a common problem that you've been going through and you figured out something really cool? We love to hear those types of conversations as well. And remember, you can get here right here on the air with me today, 314-436-7900. And we've got whole nother hour for you, plenty of time for you, anything that you want, anything that you need. I am here, and we've been talking a lot about the cold, what's been going on. I'm just so happy to hear that there's some little bit of warmer weather and a little bit of warmer weather. I obviously don't mean spring right away, but anything warmer, hitting 40, hitting 50 in the highs is just, with what we've had the past couple of weeks, is going to feel really, really great. It's going to feel good. I think we're all going to love it and in our area. So, and seeing the last, hopefully, of some of this snow melt away and go away this coming week would not hurt my feelings personally either, making it easier to get around and everything. So, hey, we've got Jim called in on the line. Let's see what's going on with Jim. How you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm loving this weather.
Yes. Isn't it nice? Yeah. Love it. So what's happening?
Well, actually, I have a condo I live in, and it's built in 1989. And I'm having an issue with the walls in the bathtub area. I've noticed during the winter months that the wall seems to want to split apart in the crease, as I guess you would say, in the corner from the bottom of the tub up to the top of the tile area. You could tell that some of the caulk and so forth has deteriorated, and it's probably maybe an eighth of an inch split. And you know, it's I'm assuming water can just drip and make that worse, and want to find out what's the best way to handle that myself.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And so is this on, this is on the inside corner of two walls where you're seeing this?
That is correct.
Yeah, kind of coming up to the top. And yeah, and my question would be, I guess you see it open up more in the winter than in the summer?
Yes, yeah, more so in the winter time, especially when it gets really cold. It's like you can tell either the foundation is either doing it or it's just the separation from hot and cold. Maybe that type of, you know, where it expands and then goes back to normal during the summer months.
Yep. And that's exactly what I was trying to figure out, because it doesn't help the situation really in the summer or the winter, but the cause built in 89, probably a little thinner walls, thinner insulation. They're starting to change a lot of our codes on buildings to where a lot of areas they're wanting 2x6 walls with more insulation, more attic insulation. So they're trying to create more stable environments on the inside of the home so that less of this type of stuff can happen. Because yeah, you're drying out, lower humidity, your wood shrinking in the winter and causing some of these gaps. And really the only thing you could do on the corner inside that shower is to clean it up and re-caulk that corner with a good mold resistant, like shower type, because there's different types of silicone caulk that are more resistant, that are made for a more of a wet application in a shower, around a sink, things like that. And you really need to just cut that out good, clean it up really, really good, clean out that crack a little bit if there's any caulk or any grout or any type of material in there to open that gap up to that eighth of an inch, because that's helpful when re-caulking. So once you have it cleaned up, you can use some alcohol wipes to kind of wipe everything down, let it dry. Don't use the shower for like 24 hours. Let it dry overnight and make sure nothing's wet inside there. Then you can re-caulk that corner from the tub or shower base all the way up to the top. And the good thing is you've got that gap. So as you're caulking, you want to fill that gap really well as you go up. And then when you kind of tool it down with either a caulking tool or your finger, it'll really spread out, push that into that eighth inch gap. And that'll be what helps really hold it solid as it moves, opens, and closes back and forth, is having it in the gap.
Well, that sounds good. At least I feel a little bit better. I guess the best time to do it is actually now while the crack is open, I guess what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And you may see the look of that caulk change a little bit at how you tooled it down in the summer, because if the gap does kind of start to close, it can kind of push that caulk a little bit, and you might see how it changes a little bit on that surface, but that's okay because it's in there and it's just kind of smashing, and it'll pull and move back as it closes and opens. It'll kind of move with it
and
keep it dry behind there. So yep.
Well, I'll take your advice on that. I really appreciate it very much, and thank you very much for having this program.
Oh, you are very welcome. Glad I can help. And yes, it is a concern with water getting behind the tile, the wall surface, whatever that surface is. You do want to keep that water out of there so it's not damaging anything behind the wall, the backer board, all of that on there. So definitely a really, really good reason to caulk that, re-caulk it, keep it caulked nice. Anytime you see it cracking open, make sure you fix that caulk and keep that water out. So hey, we've got plenty for everybody. I'll be here. We're going to jump into a quick break, but again, like Jim, you just heard, 314-436-7900 is how he found me. It's how you can find me too. We'll have more to come right after this. All right, here we go. Home Improvement Show. Like you said, Rich Orr is here for you, hopefully helping you. Any conversations you want, any questions you may have, any home maintenance, any home remodeling, maybe some DIY. Maybe you're trying to figure out if a project can be a DIY project, and how simple or hard may a particular type of project be. You can find me right here. 314-436-7900. Love to go through this. This is my favorite couple hours of the week of what I do, because I just get to touch so many homes, so many people in a quick amount of time, and it's just really great. I really, really love it. And speaking of helping out, let's see what we can do for Bill. We've got Bill on the line. How you doing today, Bill?
I'm fine, thank you very much. I live in a condo association, and we have Herd Windows is the manufacturer, and what we have is that some of the tracks are loose, and we have clips, and we found a site online where we can get them. But how do you repair those easily? Do you know?
So where is this clip at?
This clip's at the bottom. As you come down, these windows will go up and down, and then they'll pop out so that you can wash them from the outside. They'll fold down, and so we've been struggling with finding a way to get them repaired, as opposed, because everybody comes out, it's a window company, and they want to sell us new windows, and we don't think they need to be. Do you have any ideas for me?
Boy, this is, without being able to see anything, it's hard to grasp what this clip is and really what it's doing. So not offhand, without coming out and trying to look at it and see what's happening.
All right.
The clip you're talking about, is it on the window sash itself or on the frame?
No, it's on the window. It's on the window itself, and it comes down. It kind of helps keeps things in the plastic track that the windows go up and down on.
Okay.
On that, and it's a little clip. They're either bent or one of them's missing. What it makes it do is the windows wobble. Okay.
Yeah.
And so they don't stay tight. And that's got everybody in the association concerned about air leaking through and things like that. And we have been just pulling our hair out trying to figure out a way how to get that repaired. And I was just calling we listen to you all the time, so I figured maybe you guys got an idea.
Yeah. So, and you're right about, well, the concern is valid about the movement, not sealing well, having that window sash against the actual weather stripping and everything is very important. So, yeah, they can leak, be way less energy efficient. And you are talking about another one of those dying arts of people that are good and want to repair things and try and keep things sustainable. Companies nowadays are trying to do the window replacement. It's easy. They understand it. They know what they're going to get into. They know how they're going to do it. And it's definitely harder when you have something, and it's hard to say even how long it might take to repair something from one window to the next, because once you even figure out how to do it and you have somebody that can do it, one window may end up just even being tougher, and it takes 2 hours where all the rest took one. So it's really, it's hard to estimate. And so people are going away from that because, well, labor's expensive. You're estimating. You got to try and think about what if some end up taking longer. A lot of times it takes longer on the first few, and then once you get the hang of it, it starts to get a little bit faster. And that's kind of why we call it an estimate, too, because it's not perfect. It's not a science. It's not, you know, like you're not in a factory going, yes, it takes 15 seconds to put this bolt on, and I know I can do X amount per minute because I'm doing the same right. thing over and over again. And that's what makes it so hard
right.
for
Is
companies.
That something that your company does?
I mean, we can certainly consider that, yes, because we try and service our clients in a lot of different ways, and we're coming up with different programs and ways to try and help out, and this could possibly be something we could consider looking into and seeing if we could figure it out. The last real window repair place that I knew of quite some years ago, I know is out of business now. And they used to do a whole lot with older Anderson windows and stuff like that. Because if you can repair right. those, they're great windows. And they work yeah. really well. And you just got to be a little intuitive in trying to do it and trying to figure out.
Right.
So I know what I do is there's a shop called Genesco that has a lot of window parts.
Okay.
And if the part could be indicated, that might help okay. indicate how easy or hard it is to correct or repair.
Well, like I said, these are Herd windows,
mm-hmm.
and they were bought out by a company out of California, of course.
Yeah.
And we found a site that's got Herd replacementparts.com.
Yeah.
So we know that there's a site out there, but it, you know, unless you get somebody who knows how to repair them, you don't know what exactly the part is for that exact window type thing, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I would say, call into our office at Mosby Building Arts, and I'm sure they will set up one of our guys to go see either myself or any of our other exterior kind of window siding consultants to take a look, and we can kind of see and see what we think is possible. And okay. the good thing with us is we've got a lot of our own field guys that do all this window install. It's not subcontracted. It's not trade partners. So we can okay. actually get to them and kind of go, okay, we'll grab one of the exteriors project managers and say, okay, this is what I found. This is what I'm seeing. What do you guys even think about trying to get this done? And
okay.
we can we'll at least make a decision on it.
Right. Well, thank you very much. I'll give the office a call Monday morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Let them know that you called in and talked to me. And I recommended you call in, and we'll come out and try and take a look so they know where the call came from and everything.
Okay. That's great.
All right. Perfect.
Thank you.
You are very welcome, Bill. Good question. Good topic. And a big concern as we do a lot of different things in St. Louis and getting to repairing things, trying to keep things sustainable. And it is definitely hard to repair in all the, like we were saying, all the companies out there going to, I know what a window installation takes. I know how we do it. It's like a program through it. So if it's so big, it's going to go like this. And we would just rather do this than try and explore and operate and get into things. And the other kind of position of a company too is like our workmanship warranty. We may put something in there on a repair that says we can't really guarantee that this repair is going to hold up for 10 years. We put in new windows like the others. We could absolutely will install it this way. We'll give you a 10-year workmanship warranty against all this, how we installed it, that it's going to work. We'll help back that with the warranty of the window. And that's another thing a lot of companies are kind of besides themselves with. If it's something that they can't really honor their warranty or give a good warranty, then sometimes they just kind of stray away from it. So an example is a foundation repair company, when they put a sump pump inside your basement and they put the pit and all the pipes around and they collect this water and they make it work and they know it's going to work and they give you this great warranty for it. Well, a lot of homes, they put these pipes around the outside of the home, and for years and years, those pipes worked and moved water away and put water where they wanted it around the foundation. And now that something's wrong with those pipes and they're clogged and some might be broken, and they're 40, 50, 60 years old and they worked for 40, 50, 60 years. If you ask a foundation company to dig down there on the outside and redo these drain tiles around the outside, you will not get a warranty from that it won't get water to the inside. They can't 100% guarantee that. So then they just don't want to do it. And I understand, kind of makes sense because they want to offer something that they know is going to work and they can get a really, really great warranty for their clients on. So it's kind of a double-edged sword in some of these situations like that. But hey, we're going to jump to a break real quick here. Let's run through this. And Dale, if you could hold the line through the break, and for anybody else, 314-436-7900. We'll have Dale on the line for you when we get back, and plenty more when we return. All right, everybody, we are back. We got good half hour left. Don't worry, don't fret. I'm here for you. 314-436-7900. Get you to me, just like Dale, as promised. Let's jump to the phone and see what's happening. Hey, you there, Dale?
Yes, sir.
All right, thanks for calling. What do you got going on?
Well, I'm calling to help out possibly the guy that was in a condo.
With the windows? Yeah.
And they might find it helpful if they're still listening to contact Herd, the manufacturer, and tell them what their problem is. And they may have, you know, directions or some technical people that could walk them through changing those clips.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is a good thought. But, I do know we were talking about Herd getting bought out. And I do know that with a lot of window manufacturers over the years, so this is like 1989, they'll just come to a point where they're like, yeah, that's too old. And they've all, I've heard it from really all of them, Anderson, Pella, you know, all kinds of types. I've seen it with Certain Teed made a window, a vinyl window, and then they got bought out and someone else took it over and basically was making the same window, but it was hard to get a lot of information from before. So it's a good idea. It's definitely worth some phone calls to try and find out, because if they have something, that's awesome. That would be great. But from 89, they may not.
The people that bought the components or the parts to manufacture the window under another name or something may have the same design and offer the same information if you can pin them down.
Yeah.
It looks like they were in Medford, Wisconsin.
Yeah. And that's the way the Certain Teed ones were. They literally changed the name and nothing else on the particular window really changed. So for about 10 years, it was okay. But then as they got older, it started to get harder. Once the new windows did start to change, like the type of lock and the way it moves and the different springs, and they start getting away from those older systems, that's when it starts to get hard and kind of fall apart for you. But no, I appreciate the input there. And yeah, that is definitely a great idea to try and see if you can find any information out from them for sure.
Yeah, there was a Built Best window that was made here in Missouri, and there's a company down in, it's down Sullivan, I think, bought the parts inventory, and they helped me out on some Built Best windows.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yep, sometimes it's just digging, taking enough time, and find the right people, so, yep.
Right. Well, I'll let you go.
All right. Well, cool. Well, thanks for the input, Dale. I appreciate it very much. And yes, that is definitely very true. Sometimes you just got to kind of keep trying, keep pounding, keep calling and trying to get to sometimes even different people inside of the same organization might be able to find more information if maybe they were there before or not. And so, yeah, lots of reasons to get into that, and maybe they do have some records of some old instructions or window breakdowns that show you more of what's happening and everything. Certainly would make it easier on Bill and everybody there and the people trying to do the repair, absolutely. I think here while we wait and before we get into our break here, we're going to be getting to one a little relatively soon, but I wanted to kind of just touch on some of that difference in those the way companies work and think and do different things nowadays. It is definitely becoming more of processes and practices and getting more and more involved and into only doing certain line item type of repairs or replacements, or we do doors and windows, but not this or that. And that's another thing that going around trying to find people, trying to find companies to do things outside of the box, it just gets tougher and harder to do that, and kind of like the lost art of how you do some of that. And with labor cost and people needing to make so much money, it does get hard to just have somebody working for hours and paying them when you used to be able to get a guy for $10, $15, $20 an hour. Then you can just kind of like, he was happy doing that and would work for 2, 3, 4 hours and figure it out. That'd be great. We're getting into a little bit of a different, harder world in having those experiences and things going on. So, hey, we're going to jump into a break. Remember, 314-436-7900 in the next segment. Get you to me. I'll be here for you. Everyone else might hear the Billikens. All right, guys, here we go. Home Improvement Show's final segment today. If you've been thinking about it, if you've been wondering if you should call in, if you have something, anything, we've got time for a call for you right here, right now. You can find me again at 314-436-7900. Until then, I thought I'd keep on to the kind of a subject that we run into quite a bit, and it's definitely in line with that fuel burning, carbon monoxide safety thing with fireplaces, and something we talk about a lot a lot of clients ask about vent free gas fireplaces. So I've got a basement right now where designing and creating this whole lower level remodel. They want to have a room with theater and where they watch TV and nice couch. And they would like a fireplace, a gas fireplace to kind of help heat that area on the side wall of it. And of course, above it is stairs to a patio and a door and looking at trying to get a pipe outside could be very difficult. It could either, one, end up taking up space on the first floor, and that's their kitchen, and not going to be sightly. And so trying to find a vented pipe that we can get out through the band board of the house. There's a lot of stipulations that go with that, how close doors, windows, outlets, and how far off the ground it needs to be. So need to do more investigation to see if we can vent it. But of course, the conversation and the question came up of like, well, what about a gas fireplace that doesn't require a vent, doesn't need a vent to burn? And they are there. They exist. You can use them in our area. But there's, just like the kerosene heaters, just like burning any fuel, there is a lot to consider when choosing a fireplace like that. There is also a lot of, I've run into a couple of installers, fireplace installers, that just will not install them anymore. They just said, nope, we're done. We're not going to sell them. We're not going to install them because there's so many complaints later on that even when given warnings about what could happen, some people don't quite understand how bad. I've seen plenty of people that have these, that they don't have these issues. They don't have complaints. They seem perfectly fine. They're like, no, I use it. It works fine. It's great. But there's all those same things to consider with the burning of the gas and the smells and the odors and the glass fogging up. And I will never forget the first one I ever put in years ago. We remodeled a basement. We put this. It was the first one I ever even saw. And I'm like, wow, it just doesn't even need a vent. And I'll never forget the fire marshal doing the final inspection. And he looked at me during the final inspection of this whole finished basement. And he said, be sure to tell the homeowners to read the instruction manual well and to crack one of these basement windows whenever they use that fireplace. And I just thought, huh, well, that's an interesting comment from the fire marshal. So there's a lot to research and consider before using one of those. And I don't recommend them to most of my clients because of all those reasons. So, hey, we've got Ron phoned in on the line. Let's jump to Ron and see what's going on. How you doing, Ron?
I'm good. Hey, I've got a foundation question.
Sure.
We have a couple of hairline vertical cracks in our foundation that have caused some small leaks, you know, just kind of enough to dampen the floor around that area. And the basement is finished. And I've spoken to a couple of highly rated, you know, like 5-star or 4.8-star kind of companies. And number one, they've recommended an epoxy injection.
Okay.
And secondly, some are recommending doing it from the outside, and someone else is recommending doing it from the inside. And I'm just wondering, you know, which is the best way to do that?
So both ways can be really effective in stopping the water from coming in the cracks. The good thing about the epoxy injection from the inside is when you do that, they're shooting that like kind of caulk in there. It's like a urethane sealer inside that crack, and they're filling that crack up. So they use the epoxy to kind of glue to the wall. So when they put the urethane in through those little tabs that they put on there every foot or so, it's filling that whole crack all the way to the outside of the crack. And that's why that method is so, why it works so well and it's so effective, because you are stopping the water at the backside of the crack, 8 inches away from the inside of that foundation concrete. So digging from the outside can be just as effective because you are dealing with it from the outside. And so you are stopping that water on the outside of the 8-inch thick foundation crack. And why a lot of those other systems don't work well is from the inside. If you just cover that from the inside, and you've got a thin layer of caulk or epoxy or whatever you put on the wall to try and do that, and you have 8 inches of concrete and water being pushed into there, you have very little material holding back the water, and there's a lot of pressure of the ground up against the foundation. So both ways would be effective, and I would, for you, I would pick whatever's the most cost effective of how they get to it. You know, because normally they do that from the inside, because if your basement's not finished, you can see the crack, you can walk right up to it, you could do the work, and you could walk away. No digging, so that's a cheaper version. But if you got a breakthrough, drywall, move some framing, insulation, do all this, fix a crack, and then put it all back together, maybe digging outside could be just as effective cost-wise.
Terrific. Hey, thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome. Great question. Yeah, you have a great day, too. And, it's definitely something that we see often, and it's great to get those cracks filled. Not all those cracks mean there's a problem with your house. Not all those cracks mean you have settling issues or you need a bunch of foundation piers. It's very common for those vertical cracks to just appear in concrete as it shrinks. Even in the first month, 3 months, 12 months, they can happen right away, and it's not necessarily a structural problem with the foundation. Now, if you look at those cracks and they're vertical, if you see any horizontal cracks, you need to start looking at something. Diagonal cracks, need to start looking at something. If you see the vertical cracks and you start to notice that it's getting wider at the top, if you had a crack that's kind of fine-haired crack at the bottom, and it gets to be a 16th of an inch wide at the top, you're probably okay. If you notice that start to widen and you look at it a year later and you go, well, that looks much wider than it was before, that's maybe where it's tight at the bottom, separating at the top. You might be getting into some foundation peering, kind of hold my house up and make sure that I'm not going to have issues with settling and all of that going on. So there's ways to look at these cracks and find information out. But like I said, majority of them are standard cracks. Some water comes into them. Sometimes just addressing the grade and running water away will help take care of getting the water away from the foundation wall. Water doesn't come in. So we got Alan on the line. Real quick, Alan, we have very little time. What's going on?
Hey, I just wanted to call and ask maybe what the process would be if a guy was going to do a big project, he had something in mind, like an addition on his house, and had a budget, and how would he know what would be the process of finding out if what it would take to do it and how realistic it is and
sure,
that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that process is much different depending on the different types of companies. Maybe I can touch on this a little bit more next week, but definitely for Mosby Building Arts, what we do, we're full service remodeling design build company. We design it, we draw it, we have the architects, everybody on staff to do it and build it. So the really starting process is having one of our consultants come out, look at the property, talk about the project, give you some information on how we handle the design, what the steps go through, what kind of architectural services cost are involved in that end, and then also just giving some ballpark cost of like what room additions cost and possibilities of looking at the plot plan and seeing the survey, how it's going to work and all of that. So great question. I'd recommend you call us and just have a conversation and get that started. And hey, we're out of time completely. So be good to your homes, be good to each other. I'll talk to you next week.
At your service. It's the Home Improvement Show presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now, the host of the Home Improvement Show, Rich Orris, on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
All right. Good morning, St. Louis. And here we go. Welcome to the Home Improvement Show, your weekly guide to everything home maintenance and remodeling right here on my favorite station, KMOX. I'm Rich Orris. And whether you're tackling a DIY project or planning a full-scale renovation, it really doesn't matter. Maybe you just need some quick fixes to keep your home in shape. I've got you covered right here today. This show, it's all about you. It's all about your topic, your questions, your concerns. So don't hesitate to give me a call right here today, 314-436-7900. And you can ask me anything about your home improvement projects, big or small, doesn't matter, roof repairs, kitchen updates, any winter maintenance tips, you name it, we can talk about it today. Again, remember, this is about you and your concerns, your questions, and your topics. What do you have going on? So grab your cup of coffee, get comfortable. Let's dive in and let's make your house the home of your dreams. The phone lines are wide open and ready to get started. Again, 314-436-7900. Get you right into me right here today. We've got a lot of show for you today. We got plenty of time, no cards or anything like that like last week, but we do have the Billikens coming in late in the towards the end of the show, so you can stick around after the show and hear the Billikens take on the Washington Revolutionaries. So the George Washington Revolutionaries. Fun, go Billikens. So last week, I had we talked a lot about the cold, how to heat your home if your heat isn't working real well from the extreme colds. We spoke a lot and covered a lot about how to get alternative heating types and different types and safe ways to do that. And Jim had called in and kind of asked about if you have a power outage, what are some of the reasons to not use a kerosene heater, because that's definitely kerosene heaters have been around for an extremely long time, and that can be another part of the exact danger in that, especially if it's an older version. So there are some good things to kerosene heaters and how they work, and they are effective, and they're very portable. And they can be very effective. Of course, probably the biggest reason you would use one is it's independent of electricity. So if you've lost electricity and you don't have some sort of generator, then yes, it could be a good source there. But there is a lot to think about. It is relatively affordable, and it can operate for a pretty long time. Several hours against a tank of fuel. So there are some good reasons. There is some positive sides to how that can help you get through a really hard time. We're gonna stop that, drop that for just a moment, and I'll get back into that a little bit later when I have a little more time on some of the risk of that kerosene heaters. But we have Sharon on the line, has a question. I want to not keep her waiting there. So Sharon, are you with us? Can you hear me? You there, Sharon?
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Sure. I have a great solution for a problem that plagues women primarily because our hair is longer. Uh-huh. My bathroom drain was draining slowly. And I assumed it was plugged up in the pipe. So I took it all apart, and I found out that there was no clog there. So I put it all together, and I tried using a plunger because I thought maybe it was farther down in the pipe, and I got some hair out of the drain. So I was talking to my son about it, And he said, oh, yeah, there's a snake, a small snake on Amazon that you can get. It was very inexpensive. It was like maybe $20. And it's called a flexi snake. And you feed it down from your sink bowl, and you twist it around, and oh, my gosh,
I got
all kinds of hair out of there. And now my drain drains perfect. And all you ladies out there who are listening, this is something that you, maybe your husband or partner, can take care of. It took me like 10 minutes, and my drain is flowing clean. No plumber needed. It was great. It's a flexi snake. The hair gets caught in the bottom of the stopper. And I'm telling you, it's a miracle. I've been so happy since I cleaned my drain out.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, awesome. And yes, I have one of those. I've seen them. And it's the one I have, it's kind of just like a long piece of plastic in the bottom couple, 2 or 3 inches is just little pokey things coming off the plastic that it'll just, you know, it'll grab that hair and you just pull it right back out of there. It is an easy, effective way. And we've talked about it several times on the show. That, yes, those bathroom drains, when you have the pop-up in that drain, there's an arm that goes into that pipe that moves up and down. So if you think about that pipe and it's above the J-bend and everything that you took apart below, so if you just, I mean, take a pipe and put a screw through it and then try and run stuff through it and see what happens. That's why, like, downspouts have little tiny, very short screws, trying not to get anything caught on it. So you put that arm in there and that peg in there, and then it's moving that pop-up up and down, and you've blocked a large portion, and that's where all that hair gets caught. So, yes, I'm constantly doing that on my wife and my daughter's sink because they have blonde hair. Yeah,
that is exactly what it is. It's just plastic. It comes with 4 or 5 extra snakes. Used one and cleaned it off at the end, so I still have the original one that I can use again. But I want you to know it was such a relief to do that in 10 minutes and clean out my drain and know that I wouldn't have to call a plumber. It was wonderful.
Yeah, no, it is great. And for me, so me and my wife, we have double bowl sink. We each use a different sink. If you've ever seen me or if anybody knows me, I literally buzz my hair with a number 4. I have never had to do that to my bathroom sink. But the long hair, it's definitely the root cause of that 100%. So, yeah. Yep. So, yeah, thanks, Sharon. Thanks for the tip and getting that out there for everybody. I absolutely love that. And it's a great thing that we talk about often. That, yes, it definitely happens to everybody out there. And there's a quick, easy way to take care of that. So I appreciate that. We're going to jump into our first break here. So for everybody else, keep them coming in. Your thoughts, your comments, your topics, your questions, anything you have going on. You can find me right here today, 314-436-7900. And don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this. All right, everybody, we are back rolling through this home improvement show. It does go so fast. I warn everybody, it's here, it's gone. It really goes fast for I'm sure for you and for me too. So don't forget, you can find me right here. Get in soon, 314-436-7900, like John did. Let's jump to the phones on, get to John and see what is going on with John. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hey. I got a walkout basement, and I'm doing some remodeling on it. I'm curious about putting in an egress window. What do I have to worry about? What do I have to take care of? And information I need to get it done right.
Uh-huh. So are you putting, because you have a walkout, so you obviously, there's a door there on that back wall now, get you outside?
Yes.
Yeah, so are you putting that egress in a concrete foundation wall that's standing real tall out of the ground on the back of the house, or you or yes. Okay, so you don't, because the big thing is if you have to dig into the earth or not to create that egress is where's the grade level outside. So if you're looking to add some windows that are egress accessible, you can actually, there are concrete cutting companies out there, and this is even like us with Mosby Building Arts, we just bring in a saw cutting concrete company. They bolt these tracks to your wall the size that you need it for the window, and they will cut that concrete for you, and then you basically break out and knock out the piece of concrete where that window goes. So when you do that, it is good to consider what's above it, and you generally make that a little bit bigger than you need so that you can have a header installed. So you make the opening wide enough to install some framing members, some jack studs and all of that, and a header above to hold up the floor above the house. And the size and everything of that header will matter on what's above it. So there's some figuring out there, but you just want to create that opening, get the header to hold up the flooring, the walls, everything above it, and then you can install your window into that opening, and you've installed wood around that concrete. And typically you just do wood that's 8 inches, like a 2x8, so it kind of covers the whole thickness of an 8-inch concrete foundation wall. And the real trick is once you install that window in that opening, you're pretty much good, except for around the outside, you don't have the advantage of being able to create good flashing or a drainage, a water drainage shed plane to keep water from kind of getting inside or around that window. So when you cover up around the window in the wood with some trim, you will be quite reliant on kind of the caulking around that trim. And I would advise really paying attention and double checking and focusing on the fact that that caulking is good. You may need to cut it out, re-caulk, either cap it with aluminum metal or repaint that trim more often than you normally would on a wall where you can have a window with the flashing and water's going where you want it to go. Because you're in that foundation wall, there's just not a lot of opportunity for a good install when you don't have the siding around the window, and you can create a drainage plane and flash tape and do all these nifty wall fixes behind it. So that's your biggest element to keep your eye on later on with a window in a foundation wall above grade.
What about the cutout in the concrete? It goes all the way up to the, I don't know what you call it, the wood across the top of the concrete where the floor is set on. It goes all the way up to it?
Typically,
U-shaped piece of concrete cutout?
Yeah. Typically, depending on the size of the window you're putting in, they would go ahead and cut that out all the way up to the bottom of the floor joists and everything. And it depends on the width. If it's one single window, you might be able to leave the concrete, cut the kind of rectangle out, and you have a mason, brick mason, somebody put some flat steel up there to kind of help support that concrete piece in the floor above. So sometimes there is a method that costs a little more that you can leave that concrete if you have room in the height of the foundation and all of that. Typically it gets cut out and you frame it in with wood because that's quicker, easier, costs a little bit less. It's easier to get the concrete out because it's a U-shaped cut with the wood above, so you start breaking it out from the top, and then the the big piece of concrete can kind of just fall out into the yard as you're taking it out and break it up on the ground, that sort of thing. So it's it can be done the other way. It's just a little harder and typically costs a little more, and you need to get like a brick mason, somebody that's good at that, to install steel lintels to kind of hold that concrete up.
So you guys do that type of work?
We do that type of work when we are in like a basement remodel. If we were remodeling a basement and we were adding egress windows to have a bedroom and to get some light into the bedroom and to have the egress window out and everything, we can do that as just a project, but the saw cutting and the if you leave some of the concrete at the top, you need a brick mason. There's going to be some trade partners into this project that we would have. So it's really kind of looking at the whole thing. Once that's out, we can frame, put in the header, all that, and we can install the windows, and we have our own employees that do all of that work. We can do any trim work, siding above, anything we need to try and get this window in the best way possible and keep the water out and everything. So it's really a matter of are you have enough ingenuity to kind of run different trades and find them and have them do each piece, or is it beneficial to you and you want to be more hands off to have a company like Mosby Building Arts perform the entire task? We'll bring in the trades, we'll oversee them, we'll have a project manager run it and see it and get it done to the end, and then you've got this entire project with a 10-year workmanship warranty on how it got installed in the end with your new window and everything. So yes, we can do that, and that's kind of that path.
How expensive is something like that? I mean,
it depends a lot.
I'm not asking for a quote. I'm just just a number.
Yeah, no, it definitely depends a lot on some of the circumstances that need to happen around, but it will definitely be at least around $10,000, something like that, starting point. So egress windows, when you're digging in the ground and you got to put in kind of the groundwork and the window well and all that, they get up $10,000-$15,000 or so sometimes.
Okay, that's an expensive project, is what you're
yes.
telling me.
Yeah, it can be. A lot of different steps and a lot to go through, yep.
Okay, I think you answered most of my questions. I thank you.
All right. Hey, you're welcome. Good question, good topic, something we do all the time, and we do a lot more when we're doing an entire basement remodel. But we've got Sean on the line. If we can just – I'm going to get to our middle hour break here before I get to Sean. If you have time, hold the line. We'll do a real quick break, get everybody back, and I will get to you, Sean, as soon as we return. Don't go nowhere. More to come. All right, everybody. We are back. Home Improvement Show. Do not forget the way you find me, the way to get to me, whatever you need. Pick up your phone. Dial 314-436-7900. I want to get straight to Sean, as promised, and see what's going on. So now hopefully we'll have plenty of time for you here. Sean, what's happening?
Good morning. Thank you for my call. Great bumper music, by the way. Heart
yeah.
Barracuda.
Yeah, yeah.
do you remember the mid-60s Barracudas with the big windows in back?
No, I don't. Was born in 71, so...
Then I guess you don't.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah. Have,
we uh-huh. have dual HVAC systems at our house, and I have them maintained every spring, every fall. And this winter, with the really cold snap, our humidifiers weren't able to keep up. Now, when they had maintained them, they said, well, you need all new solenoids because it's not delivering as much water to the pad as it could. And I just said, no thanks, not at $175 just for the solenoids.
Yeah.
Are there ways to maintain those just so that I can get them running? I do see water dripping out when I open up the access panels.
So, I mean, not really. There's not a whole lot you can do for that that I know of to try and get more water coming out of that. I mean, it is something that just kind of wears down, and it at some point either needs whole new humidifier or, like they said, those solenoids changed to get enough water coming to it. When you set the setting, did you turn them up as high as you could get them?
The Ecobee thermostat systems we have recommend 50. I push them up to 60, but we're still, especially in the cold snap, hovering somewhere around the 20 to 26% level. We do have very hard water in the area, and I'm afraid that's what's kind of making the delivery system not work so well.
And so if you one thought would be, if you do the maintenance and get those replaced, a water softener system could help that last longer. It helps all those working parts last longer in our washing machines and our dishwashers and all that. It would do the same thing for your humidifier. So a water softener might be a good solution to add to try and lengthen the life of all those devices, including the humidifiers. And yes, most, unless you have humidifiers that are monitoring the level of humidity actually in different parts of the homes, it is okay to crank that humidifier up and monitor the relative humidity in the home yourself on a device, because those aren't always very accurate. And on normal humidifiers, like the one I have in my house, you got the 20, 40, 60 settings. That doesn't necessarily mean you turn it to 40 and it's going to try and keep your house at 40. It's like a prediction. It's not actually trying to, you know, figure out what the level is and get it up to there. It just, so the more the merrier. If you're monitoring your first floor, second floor, and you're down in the 20s, then yes, it is. And it's hard to be that high in the winter to get it to, you know, I mean, 45% relative humidity in your house is ideal. It's hard to get it there, even with humidifiers in the winter with the air, the heat running, all that stuff. So I always recommend have different digital humidifier setting, you know, testers around the house that show what the level of humidity in the house is digitally, and keep your eye on that and move that up and down accordingly. So mine, I'm the same way. My house is always down, and I turn my humidifiers all the way up, and it keeps it in the 30s, and I never hit 40 or above in the winter, no matter how hard those humidifiers work.
What about potentially taking those off and dropping a little CLR into the outlet nipple and seeing if that might clear up some of that? Is that something that would damage those?
I mean, I wouldn't think it would. It could definitely possibly clear some of that up. I just don't know how well and how long that, you know, restoring it to new is going to be the best way to know that it's good and it's working the best it can until it gets old enough to where it starts to reoccur because of that hard water.
And it's an easy fix to replace those too. So, okay.
Yeah. It's just, and labor's the key on most of that stuff. The labor is so expensive anymore these days. It's not necessarily always what they're buying. I mean, everything we buy costs more, but it's the labor of
Each solenoid is about $100.
Yeah.
So, at least from what I've seen. So,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Hey, yeah, you too. No problem. No problem at all. Let's go to Michelle and see what's happening over there. Are you there?
Yes, thank you.
I just
have a quick question. I have a 132-year-old home. It was originally a very old farmhouse, but things were updated, and I won't get into all that. But what I do need to ask you, is knob and tube wiring still acceptable?
Yeah, I mean, it is.
I might have all of it. There's some, but it was the house still was inspected some, in the past. But.
Yeah, there's still some in the house, and that's fine. And as long as one of the main things with knob and tube that you have to watch is insulating. It's good. Good to get rid of it if you're gonna re-insulate an attic space.
Because
typically they didn't have a lot of insulation in the houses, and the knob and tube was exposed more, and it's just not a great idea. Or if you're gonna blow insulation inside cavities,
no.
But
it
lasts a very long time, and it's relatively safe. The wires are very far apart, so you're not rubbing the positive and negative together and all of that. So I see homes all the time that still have knob and tube, and
houses are 132 years old.
Oh,
and then the other question.
It's hard to get rid of. It's hard to change. It's hard to get rid of. I mean, it's big projects. I've done projects. There were thousands of dollars to get rid of that.
Oh,
you're going through plaster and rerunning wires and all of that. Yeah.
Because of what you were going to do, though. Like, I'm not planning on everything. I don't even have a... I have a dinky little attic on top of a half story, but I have no plans of doing anything. I was just curious if it was still acceptable. The other question I have is, I also have a very long galvanized pipeline. I guess it's water that goes out to the front of the house. Is that still acceptable? And one time somebody made a remark to me, oh, you're gonna have to have that replaced, they don't use gas. Well, it's like, well, they may not use it, but
well, yeah, so it's acceptable to be in the home. So if you typically, in most areas, if you go to sell a home and it's an old home and it still has some knob and tube wiring, it still has some galvanized pipe, they're not going to force you to change any of that. If it's still functioning, all of that, it's still acceptable. The things you have to watch are, if you add to it and you add copper, there's special fittings. Galvanized and copper should not touch. They will corrode. And those galvanized pipes will corrode on the inside. They will fill up. They will get all the calcium, all that. And generally, the reason we change galvanized pipes is because you lose water pressure. And kind of like Sean was just talking about, pouring CLR down there, pouring acid down there to try and break that up and get water pressure back. The most reason we change galvanized water lines is that we just lose water pressure. They get caked up so much that we cut it out and we put in copper in its place. Then it doesn't happen to the copper nearly as bad as the galvanized. So
I gotcha. Yep. All right. Well, thank you so much. Those were my two questions. Have a good weekend.
Perfect. You too. You have a great weekend. I appreciate the call. We're going to get into our last break of this hour for everybody. Don't forget, I'm here. Great conversations. Great questions so far. 314-436-7900. More Home Improvement Show to come right after this.
It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts on KMOX. Now, once again, Rich Orris.
All right, guys, we are back. Home Improvement Show, plenty going on. Don't forget, after this hour, we have a full another hour coming around for you. Plenty of time. Plenty of topics, plenty of time for more calls. 314-436-7900. Get you right into me. We can get you in right away. Don't hesitate whatsoever, but I think I will kind of take this time to get back into these kerosene heaters a little bit, because we kind of went through some of the good reasons, some of the positive side of like why they work so well and how they are easy to use. But the downside to, you have a power outage, you have this kerosene heater, using this indoors, there is a lot to consider in trying to be safe. And number one is just, again, the possibility of carbon monoxide poisoning, the risk you are burning a fuel. And there's all sorts of issues with the smells and the chemicals it puts in the air and the carbon monoxide it can. And when you look at any of these units, they basically all tell you right there to use in a well-ventilated area with a window or door slightly open. Well, if you don't have power and you're trying to heat your home and it's super cold outside, opening a door or a window is kind of, you need the ventilation, but it's kind of counterintuitive. If you had like a flue, a chimney, something going up, it could get rid of all that, just like from your furnace or your water heater or any other gas burning appliance. That would be great. But then your holes in the top, your ventilation's in the top, all the hot air you produce rises and it would be leaving anyway. So it would have to work very hard to keep up in an instant like that anyhow. So we also have to think of it's burning fuel, the hazard of fire, the risk of having a kerosene heater running open flame. It just increases the potential of accidents, a tipped over heater, anything near curtains, furniture, clothing. It just, house fires are big, huge thing that you need to try and go through a lot of preventive tips to keep that from happening. So that is a severe thing to think about when using that kerosene type heater. And having a newer updated kerosene heater that if it tips over or something will shut itself off. If you have this old heater, it's great. It's kerosene. It's worked for years. It was your parents' heater. It's probably not going to have those type of features. And of course, as you're trying to use it, another concern is burns. Just the risk of burns on pets, children, as you're trying to refuel, use, it's hot. It can burn you. Indoor air quality is another thing to consider with it, and just everything that it's putting into the air. So using a high-grade kerosene, there are different grades of kerosene. It will burn cleaner and produce less emissions as it burns. So make sure you have a really good type of kerosene if you are considering doing that. Another risk is just the fuel itself, storage of the fuel, handling the fuel. There's the risk of spills while trying to do all of this. Where do you keep it? Driving with it? There's all these other risks of just having the fuel. And then, of course, from the emissions that come off, even if it's not carbon monoxide, there's also other odors that can irritate your eyes, your breathing, all of that together. And of course, depending on ventilation to do it is just not, might work as well. So there's a lot of safety concerns to consider when using a kerosene heater like that. And in the field working, when I was building garages and houses and room additions, and it's cold like this outside, and we're building a room addition, we would have these big bullet heaters that we would run that burn fuel like that. But we're in a building that is open, it's plywooded, it probably doesn't have windows yet as we're framing walls and all of that. It's got a lot of ventilation to that building as you're working in it. So blasting something like that and it's being able to ventilate works well in the construction industry, but it's just really something you need to think hard on and consider and follow a lot of the safety tips, because they also produce moisture, burning fuels. There's so many different things that happen when you do that. So a lot of the tips, of course, have a newer version. Make sure it has safety features on it. Follow the manufacturer's guidelines and instructions of everything, what to do, how to do. Never use it without good, proper ventilation. Keep a fire extinguisher rated for that type of fire nearby that you can easily get to. Test your smoke detectors and your carbon monoxide detectors regularly, because there's a huge threat of both fire and carbon monoxide when doing that. And then, of course, only use them as temporary solutions for a quick outage, something like that, just so that it's very short term. It was never meant to be a very long term effect and way to heat the house without a way to properly ventilate and all that. And then the other things you can consider is doing some research, looking around and considering some other alternative methods of solar powered, battery powered, different heaters like that that you can find that don't run off of a fuel is a great way to do it. And then, of course, there's always a generator outside away from the house running an extension cord in to run some sort of heater to keep yourself warm that doesn't produce all the off gases, emissions, and carbon monoxides is another easy way, great idea to handle that and go through that. And of course, we all know, layer up, insulate, do everything you can, block windows, do everything to keep the cold out is a really another good way and advantage of blankets over doors and windows and anything you could do to prevent the leaks and keeping the cold on the other side of the wall is a good thing to do if and when you are in a situation like that. So there are lots of other ways we can consider what to do without burning fuels during all of that, so or during a power outage or any problems that you have. So consider all of those. We're going to get into our hour break here right now, but more to come, plenty to come with the Home Improvement Show in the next hour. Don't worry, 314-436-7900. I'll be here.